Seventh Canto, Chapter 9, Text 35.
Thank you.
Saha,
he,
Lord Brahma,
Tu,
God, Atma Yomihi,
who is born without a mother,
directly begotten by the Father, Lord Vishnu, Ati Vismitaha, very much surprised, not finding the source of his birth. Ashrataha, situated on. Abjam, the lotus. Kalina, in due course of time. Tivra tapasa, by severe austerities. Payushuddhabhavaha, being completely purified. Tvam,
you.
Atmani,
in
his body and existence.
Isha,
O my Lord. Bhuvi, within the earth. Dantam,
Om.
Iva,
Ati
Sukshmam,
very subtle.
Bhuta Indriya, composed of elements and senses. Ashayamaye, and that filled with desires, the mind. Vittatam,
spread out.
Tadarsha,
found.
Lord Brahma, who is celebrated as Atma Yoni, having been born without a mother, was struck with wonder. Thus he took shelter of the lotus flower. And when he had been purified, after undergoing severe austerities for many hundreds of years, he could see that the cause of all causes, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was spread throughout his own body and senses, just as aroma, although very subtle, is perceived in the earth. Here the statement of self-realization, aham brahmasmi, which is interpreted by the Mayavadi philosophy to mean, I am the Supreme Lord, is explained. The Supreme Lord is the original seed of everything. Janmadya suyatai, aham sarvasya prabhupo mattasa anparvartate. Thus the Supreme Lord extends everywhere, even throughout our bodies. Because our bodies are made of material energy, which is the Lord's separated energy. One should realize that since the Supreme Lord spreads throughout one's body, and since the individual soul is a part of the Supreme Lord, everything is Brahma, sarvam kalavidam Brahma. This realization was achieved by Lord Brahma after he was purified, and it is possible for everyone. When one is completely in knowledge of aham brahmasmi, he thinks, I am part of the Supreme Lord. My body is made of this material energy, and therefore I have no separate existence. Yet although the Supreme Lord is everywhere, he is different from me. This is the philosophy of Jinchen Pidhapid. Om Jnana Tigirantasya Jalanjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Pistam Sthapitam Jena Kutale Tayam Guru Avalamayam Tathati Shabhatantikam Andeham Shri Guru Shri Vita Padakamalam Vaishnavas
Sadvaitam Shapatutam Parijanasahitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Sri Radha Krishna Padam Shagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Namaskara He Krishna Karuna Sindhau Kina Bandho Vipattate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Tata Kanta Mosuke Tapta Kamshana Gopangi Gadhe Vrindaveshvi Vishwa Panamusite Devi Pranamami Vancha kotarubhyascha kripasambhavyayetacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Vedanta Shri Vaishnava Gaurava Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Sattvatma Yonir Adi Vishnita Ashrito Jam Kalena Tivra Tapasa Parishuddha Bhava Tvam Atmanisha Purigantam Vivati Sukshmam The history was that Lord Brahma found himself alone in the universe. And while sitting on the lotus flower in the darkness of the universe, he began to wonder. Who am I? And why am I here? And what is my origin? He thought, this is a natural human inquiry to ask who we are, why we're here, where we've come from. So Lord Brahma, being intelligent, asked these questions. And he thought that he'd get the answer by research, by empirical research, by the scientific method, with his foreheads. He therefore dove down into the water. He thought, I'm on the lotus has a stem, the stem goes down into the water, and I reach the end of the stem, the other one end is the lotus, and the other end is going to be the source of everything. That was his calculation. But then he found that however far he went, he wasn't far enough. And therefore, he was obliged to give up. Vismitaha. He was exceedingly surprised. He thought that I'm going to find it. I'll just go far enough and I'll reach the beginning. But it didn't work. And therefore, he was very much surprised. So Ashrita Abjam, he came back and sat on the lotus again. And Kalena, Tivratapasa Parishuddha, he became Parishuddha, completely purified in his consciousness. Kalena Tivratapasa, by severe austerities, tapasya, performed over a long period of time. 100 years by calculation of the demigods, is that so many years he meditated. And he was successful. Tivra tapasa, kalena. It required austerity and it required time also. And things don't happen instantly. Tivra tapasa parishu tapala. Tvamatmani isha bhuvi kandami bhav ati shukshma tadarsha. He expected to find the origin of everything someplace out there, down in the water. I'm here, and the origin is somewhere out there, or down there. But he, after failing to find it, by his austerity, eventually he was able to realize that this Supreme Absolute Truth is present within me. He thought in a sort of compartmentalized way. Lotus is here, I'm here on the lotus, the stem is below the lotus, below the stem is the origin, and in this way we go from here to there and we find the source. But the matter was more subtle than that. And by dint of his austerities, he was finally able to realize that the Absolute Truth is everywhere. Sarvakalabhinam Pamana. There's everything, the Absolute Truth includes everything. Parasha Pamana Shakti Tateva Monkey Mamakat. Eka Deja Sitasya Nirkho Sandhistaviti Pistaviti. The entire universe is filled with the energy of the Lord. And the Bhagavad Gita, Humirapo Nalo Vayu Kamano Pritire Vacha. These are separated energies of the Lord, earth, water, fire, and so on. And therefore, they're not different from the Lord. Shakti, Shakti, Matriyara, Matrita. So, there's nothing other than Brahma, Sarvakalavita Brahma. Therefore, I'm also Brahma. My body is also Brahma. My mind is also Brahma. Everything is Brahma. So, Aham Brahmasmi. I'm also Brahma. That's a fact. Krishna is the only Krishna exists. Vasudeva, sorry. Vasudeva Sarvamiti, Krishna is everything. Since he's everything, there's nothing outside of him. Vasudeva Sarvamiti, he's the only entity that exists. Then what about us? What about the world? What about everything else? They're all part of Krishna. The earth is part of Krishna, water is part of Krishna, fire is part of Krishna, mind is part of Krishna. The living entities are part of Krishna, Amimam Sudhut. They have no separate existence, we have no separate existence, apart from Krishna. As a fire is in one place and spreads its light and heat in different directions, the Krishna, although situated in Goloka Vrindavan, Goloka Gila Nivasati, Akilatu, he's everywhere. By the diffusion of his energies. But by thoughtful contemplation, Lord Brahma was able to realize this. My body is not. Yeah, absolutely. Ashayamayi, Ashayamayi, is that how it's mentioned? Yeah, Ashayamayi. Prabhupada doesn't comment on it, but it's an interesting word for the mind. That thing which is full of desires, full of aspirations, full of hopes. Ashayamayi. That's also Krishna. The soul is also Krishna. But at the same time, not Krishna. This is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy, Achintya Bheda Abhedita. Oneness and difference, simultaneously. Otherwise, the mind is also Krishna, therefore by following my mind, I am following Krishna. My senses are also Krishna, therefore by obeying the demands of my senses, I am following the orders of the Supreme Lord. No. They're identical with Krishna, but different from Krishna. Therefore, by following my mind and senses, I become a dog. Oh, I didn't ask you, by the way, to do that. Please check your mobiles. By following the mind and senses, one becomes degraded, and by following Krishna and his direct instructions, as received through the parampara system, one becomes elevated. Otherwise, everything is Krishna. Then there's no difference between anything and anything. That was defeated by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mother. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was eating dirt. He was reported to be eating dirt, as Krishna had previously also been eating dirt. So then, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his mother said, "You're eating dirt? What is this?" Yes, Sarva-Kala-Viva Brahma. Everything is one, so there's no difference between eating dirt and eating sweetmeats. It's all the same. Everything is one. So his mother responded, and I think it's Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who said after all she was the wife of a pundit, so she was well conversant, that yes, everything is one, but there are differences. If you eat sweetmeats, you'll get nourishment. If you eat dirt, you'll get sick. If I take earth in the form of a pot, I can carry water. If I have earth in the form of a brick, can't do it. So everything's one, that's all right, earth is earth. But in the form of a brick, nothing. In the form of a pot, yes, then I can carry the water. Why didn't you tell me this philosophy before? So in this way, Prabhupada said the child philosopher was defeated. An example given in regard to Achintya Bheda Tattva, Bheda Bheda Tattva, is that of the aroma within the earth. In the earth there are aromas and colors, but one cannot see them. Actually, we find that when flowers grow from the earth, they appear with different colors and aromas, which they have certainly gathered from the earth, although in the earth we cannot see them. Similarly, the Supreme Lord, by his different energies, spreads throughout one's body and soul, although we cannot see him. An intelligent man, however, can see the Supreme Lord existing everywhere. Andantarasta padamam jayantarastam. The Lord is within the universe and within the atom by his different energies. This was the real vision of the Supreme Lord for the intelligent man. Brahma, the first created being, became the most intelligent man by his tapasya, austerity, and thus he came to this realization. We must therefore take all knowledge from Brahma, who became perfect by his tapasya. And knowledge descends in the parampara system, evam parampara praptam, and it's received by a person who's willing to undergo austerity. We can't undergo the austerities accepted by Lord Brahma, but at least we can follow four regular principles: no gambling, no intoxicants, no meat eating, and no illicit sex, and chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Rise early in the morning, follow some program of sadhana. This is within our capacity, and we must do it. All right, are there some questions? I was talking about following our senses, yes.
Yes, and that is not necessarily following Krishna.
That's not necessarily
following Krishna,
yes. Even though the senses are part of Krishna, yes. If we follow the preferences of someone like Srila Prabhupada with purified senses, he liked to eat a certain thing, he liked to dress a certain way.
Is that
following Krishna? Yeah, well, first of all, by following the senses, one becomes degraded. But if we follow this, if we try to please the senses of Krishna rather than our own senses, or please the senses of the spiritual master who's representing Krishna, then we become purified, because their senses are understood to be purified. Or, not exactly pleasing the senses of the spiritual master, but pleasing the senses of Krishna under the direction of the spiritual master, or pleasing the senses of the spiritual master. The spiritual master is pleased by devotional service that can be offered to Krishna. When the senses are purified, they'll dictate, we want Krishna consciousness. And when the senses are contaminated, we want sense gratification. So these same senses, what is that? Durada, Tendriya, Sarvakara, Patali, the senses are like serpents, but when they're purified or engaged in the service of Krishna, then they're like serpents with broken teeth. They're okay. Now, by following his preferences, his orders, his instructions. Just like Prabhupada was very fond of Karela. Now, it doesn't mean that if I want to be Krishna conscious, I also have to be very fond of Karela. That's what may be, or what may take the opportunity, if he's not already fond of Karela, to find out what the attraction is in Karela. But still, at the end of the day, one may say, it's not my taste. I'm not so fond of Karela. Or Prabhupada may have been fond of Kachuris, and we may be more fond of samosas or sweet things. So it's not that we have to have the same preferences precisely, that he preferred this, well, that we have to prefer that very same thing. But he gave us directions. He gave us directions that how kirtan should be performed, how he preferred that we serve the deity, how he preferred that we dress, how he preferred, what he preferred us to offer to the deity. Some direction is there from the spiritual master, and that we should follow. Is that okay? How could I justify a culture?
Yes. You know, if there's, if Krishna likes something.
Something. Krishna likes something. He's in Vrindavan, Vrindavan has its culture. Therefore, Prabhupada one time said, I want all of my disciples to go to India and learn culture. Prabhupada established that. And so much is there, actually so many questions can be answered by observing Indian culture, like Prabhupada, I want Varnashram. And we have all these big conferences. What's Varnashram? How do you do Varnashram? But actually if you spend some time traveling to villages in India and observing what they do there, you'll see Varnashram. Somebody's a school teacher, someone's plowing, someone's a policeman, someone's the teacher. Everything is there to be seen. You can also see it quite messed up in India. It's not that everything is hunky-dory. But Prabhupada said, dead or alive, an elephant is worth a lakh. And still if you go, well, at least I can say 30 years ago, and still it must be, that still if you go to the right places, you'll see it in action. And then it's easier to understand. It's like trying to understand what a centipede is and you've never seen one. Once you've seen it and watched it walk, then you can say, centipede, this is what it does. So Prabhupada did give us a certain culture. Prabhupada established what he liked and what he didn't like. Like he told Jadarani one time early on, because all the ladies used to wear the standard American dress or substandard American dress. And Prabhupada gave the hint that a woman looks very feminine in a sari, which is a roundabout way of saying, this is what you should wear. So these directions are given. And Prabhupada also told us that when his godbrothers were telling him, you know, where the fork goes and where the knife goes, and that you should wear the be suited and booted, as Prabhupada put it, dressed like a Western gentleman. Prabhupada said, I'm not going there to learn their culture. I'm going there to give them our culture. And Prabhupada did that. And he was even proud of his disciples who had adopted this way of life, seeing the picture of early devotees in front of 26 Second Avenue. Prabhupada said that the picture should be called Angels from Vaikuntha. It's even mentioned about some low-class people in Nectar of Devotion that they're low-class, but when they're dressed with tilak and beads and dressed like Vaishnavas, then they look very
nice. Again, like as if they were coming from Vaikuntha. Now, that said, there may be some strategy by which we dress differently. Prabhupada told his scientists that they should dress in suit and tie because they had to address the scientific community at conferences and so on. And to be respected, they would have to look like scientists. Scientists wear suits and ties. And Prabhupada said they should adopt that dress. Our Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj adopted sometimes an African dress or a kind of hybrid Indian-African dress. And he sometimes caught a little flack from it in Mayapur, but he did that. And the judging by the result, we see that he succeeded in attracting people to Krishna consciousness. He was innovative. He tried this and tried that and brought people to Krishna consciousness. I remember I visited him in Washington, D.C. at the Institute for Applied, what was it, Applied? Something? Applied Spiritual Technology. You know, not International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Institute for Applied Spiritual Technology. And this was on sort of the back side of Capitol Hill, which is to say the black side of Capitol Hill. And when I went there, the whole place was quite, it was a nice place, and it was definitely an African place. Rather than having, you know, like Shiva statues or Krishna statues, there were these two big golden Egyptian black cats. And there were other various kinds of motifs that said Africa. So he presented this interesting, innovative mixture of Krishna philosophy and a little bit of Indian, but much more African culture. And he succeeded in attracting a high class of professional African Americans to Krishna consciousness. So successfully, but that by the time they realized that they were part of the Krishna consciousness movement, it was too late. And then they took to all of the culture that Srila Prabhupada had given us. So from one point of view, we can say that he caught the fish and didn't get wet. Prabhupada said that that's our policy, to catch the fish and not get wet. So, for example, our scientists went to scientific conferences, suited and booted, but they didn't become reductionistic, materialistic scientists. Rather, they were able to influence reductionistic, materialistic scientists and give them some ideas from Vedic literature. Similarly, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj dressed African, he did the African thing, but he didn't become African as he was before. It's not that he was kind of missing Africa and remembering the days when he had an afro back in Princeton. But he strategically adopted some of these applied spiritual technologies or applied material technologies to bring people to Krishna consciousness, and he successfully did it. So our purpose is to bring people to Krishna consciousness, and sometimes we consider what works. And sometimes we don't also. Or sometimes what appears to work doesn't work. When the Radha Damodar Party in its early incarnation, before it became the biggest book distribution party in America, maybe even before Tamal Krishna Maharaj became involved with it, it became something else once Tamal Krishna Maharaj got involved. But early on, it was the road show. And they presented a rock opera, which was a dramatic performance in which someone goes from karmic life to devotee life, and there are all these songs along the way, and so on. And they would go to college campuses. And it seems to be a very good thing. But after some time, Prabhupada stopped it. Another change. Stop all this nonsense. Simply chant Hare Krishna. So sometimes innovation is appreciated, and sometimes innovation is not appreciated. Sometimes it successfully brings people to Krishna consciousness, and sometimes it successfully brings us to their consciousness. Sometimes we catch the fish, and sometimes we just get wet. Another example is in my mind. We were distributing books, and someone had an innovative idea. We could make records and distribute records. And then the records would give you a good profit, and they would attract people because people like records more than books, and then you could distribute more books. Great scheme. Thumbs down. Thumbs down for a try. He didn't like it. And he saw that practically your records don't do anything. It's the books that do something. And there's no need for all of these tricks and devices. Simply glorify the book, and people will take it. Then there were later ideas in other parts of the world. We can distribute towels, beach towels. We can distribute paintings. We can distribute this, we can distribute that. And it will make money, and with the money we can spread Krishna consciousness. This was like Prabhupada's strategy before he took sannyas, or before his business failed. I'll make money, and then with the money I'll spread Krishna consciousness. And Krishna says, my foot. And smashed the business and put Srila Prabhupada in another line of business. And Prabhupada said, I started this business with $7, and that will just see. So, someone had the great idea that we could distribute records, we could distribute distribute painting, you can distribute this, you can distribute that, and then the result is that our men just become businessmen, and their consciousness goes to hell. And then they think, why am I'm making so much money, why am I handing it over to these guys? I could use it for my family expenses. Then you lose the money, you lose the opportunity to distribute books, and you lose the men, and you lose, finally, everything. Prabhupada told the story of the man who was traveling, who was a Brahmin, a high-class Brahmin, and he'd been traveling for many, many days in some desert somewhere, and he was starving. He was starving. And finally, off in the distance, he saw a little hut, and he thought, thank God, someone is there, I'll get some food. And so he headed off in that direction, but as he came near, he saw that it was the home of a Muslim. And in those days in India, if a Brahmin even entered the home of a Muslim, he would lose his caste. Which means like the equivalent in America to losing your job and being thrown out of the profession. Plus, he would just be thrown out of his community. But he was so hungry that he thought, what can I do? So he knocked on the door and the Muslim gentleman came out, sir. Sir, do you have any food? Yes, come in, sit down. The man, Brahmin man, came and sat down. Muslim gentleman put a little plate of food, and the Brahmin, yes, took it. But it wasn't very much. Sir, do you have any more? No, I'm sorry, sir, I've given you everything that we have. Now I've lost my caste. And I'm still hungry. So that was the story Prabhupada told in regard to compromise. And he told Giriraj Maharaj one time, he said, my Guru Maharaj never compromised, I never compromised, nor should any of my disciples ever compromise. So it requires careful thought. And we know that there are certain things we can do that are like sure things. Is it okay to chant Hare Krishna? Yeah, it's okay. Our Abhiram Prabhu and Ram Roy, our Ram Roy Prabhu in Manhattan, and with some help from Abhiram Prabhu, are pushing on Harinam Sankirtan in Union Square and other places in New York City. And what do you know? People love it. And people become attracted, and people buy books, and people become devotees, and people say, I saw you on Union Square, and they come to the temple. Who would have imagined that kirtan would work? It's a sure thing. Similarly, book distribution. It's a sure thing. Similarly, establishing temples where Krishna is nicely worshipped is a sure thing. There are so many things that Prabhupada directly gave us, and they're sure things. Now, there may be other things that you can do, but you do that at your risk. And one has to consider very carefully whether I'm going to please my spiritual master or displease my spiritual master, whether the result will be that the fish will be caught or that the creature will get wet. And we've had a lot of wet creatures over the years. Sannyasis who thought that this nice lady could be engaged in Krishna's service. And the lady thought brought this nice man to be engaged in my service. I guess who won?
How much this culture has to do with Krishna consciousness? Like outer thing has a connection, like if we change the dress, naturally the feeling would also come in the direction, like say with the Western dress.
Yeah, we see that the dress and the culture and so on all support Krishna consciousness. And even in the old days, we could sort of see once a person was like starting to put on his normal clothes to go do this and go do that, we said, this guy's in trouble. I mean, you're right. It was like a reliable indicator that he was feeling uncomfortable in Krishna consciousness, or he was going to do some things that you couldn't do if you were dressed this way. The dress has a sort of protective quality. Srila B.R. Sridhar Maharaj one time said that there was a poster in India during the war, which was the poster was just a uniform, an army uniform. And the slogan was, put on the uniform and the uniform will tell you what to do. So when you dress this way, there are certain things that are expected of you. Even the public expects you to act a certain way. And you yourself may expect yourself to act a certain way. And then when you put on your biker outfit, you know, it's like a whole different ballgame. So this dress serves to remind us of Krishna, serves to remind us of our identity as servants of Krishna. It reminds the public of Krishna. One definition of a devotee is a person who, when seen, reminds us of Krishna. And I think so many of us have had experience of dressing in this way and being approached by people. Who are you, a Buddhist or something? Or I was approached by one lady on the plane. She was in total distress. I don't know. Are you a priest? Could you pray for me? Or a conversation starts because you're dressed this way. Speaking of innovation, if you've gone to Park Avenue and said, we have a little group of people with philosophy, we'd like to spread this philosophy, could you come up with some way to make us visible? And you've gone to Hilda Moulton or one of those great guys, the best of them would not have come up with something as good as what Prabhupada gave us. We're so visible. And in the 1970s, just when we were going out chanting Hare Krishna on the streets, I saw you in London, I saw you in Los Angeles, I saw you here, I saw you there. And the estimates were that there were like 25,000 of us, 50,000 of us, 100,000 of us. You know, when there was like 800, maybe 1,000 or so. Okay. We were seen everywhere. Because we were dressing this way, we were chanting that well-known song, we were distributing those books. Millions of dollars worth of publicity that you could not have gotten from the best professionals in the network. So there's a value there, certainly. It informs the public about Krishna consciousness, it informs ourselves of Krishna consciousness, so we like it. And Prabhupada. Now, that's not to say that there are appropriate times to dress differently. I think our professional people in their work don't always head off to their medical practice or engineering firm dressed in kurta. distributors, Prabhupada approved when they dressed in civic dress for distributing his books. It was a controversy at the time, and Prabhupada came down on the side of those who were changing their dress to distribute Krishna consciousness. Our devotees who were going to the Soviet Union in the old Soviet days, or going to, when Tilak Krishna was going to China, he didn't show up. Tilak and go to Kirtan. So for purposes we can change. For purposes we can adopt problems at any means, any dress. And then we have to see what the result will be. Are we catching the fish, or are we getting wet? Is that okay?
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he himself not only took the mood of Srimati Radharani, but also the hue, the color of Srimati Radharani.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu adopted not only the mood of Radharani and the color, but also the color of Radharani. Yes.
That is the reason that his own feeling would not come without the mood would not come of an ashraya tattva or a devotee unless he changes the body color also.
His mood would not come unless he changed his bodily color also. He could do what he likes. If he'd been purple, still, the mood could be purple. But he chose to appear in that color and mood both. Yes.
Hare Krishna.
You see these controversies.
And, you know, I stay neutral because I try to see both.
And you stay neutral because you try to see both sides.
One is, to me, preserving a precious culture. And another is trying to take the risk. I always hear...
One side is preserving the culture, the other side is taking a risk to distribute the culture. This is a, for those who are interested, it's not an argument unique to the Hare Krishna movement. It's common to pretty much every religious culture, as well as to political movements and other movements. And the question can be formulated in the form of what is essential to keep and what is okay to change. That's really the form of the question. What is essential and what's the substance and what's the package? And in general, the understanding is that the packaging may change from time to time, so that the substance can be delivered. Prabhupada's phrase was new wine, old wine in a new bottle. So that sometimes Prabhupada expressed it in the Nectar of Devotion as the essential principles and the details. He said the details can change, but the essential principles should stay the same. So there's always, in just about every movement, there's tension between two sides of people who take one side or the other. Those who say, "Well, no, this isn't part of the package. This is part of the very substance." And then the other guys say, "Ah, it's just a package. You got it." And you can, and it goes on like that. So that you get, for example, people in one religious culture who are still wearing the dress of, is it medieval Europe or something? Black coats and black hats. I guess it's not medieval, but it's 18th century Europe or something. I don't want to say anything about whether that's a good choice or a bad choice for them, but that's what they've decided to do. And then there are others who've decided that we don't need to do any of that, we just dress like everybody else, and we do everything like everybody else, and we pretty much become like everybody else. So there's always a tension between the two. What's the package? What's the substance? And if you go to one side, you just maintain everything exactly as it is, as if every single detail were essential, and you can't change anything. You know, because we wore two-color socks in 1968, you have to wear two-color socks now. Or, you know, everything has to be exactly this way. And then it becomes very difficult to spread anything. You know, Bhakti Tirtha can't do his thing. Tomorrow Krishna Maharaj has to dress like this to go to China. Book distributors have to dress like this to distribute books. Nothing can change. Prabhupada can't cross the ocean. Can't use these crazy beads from the hardware store. You have to use Tulsi beads. So many things that Prabhupada himself did that were innovative, and his godbrothers criticized. So you can't do any of that stuff. You have to keep everything as it is, and then your movement doesn't spread. Then on the other side, everything is up for grabs, everything is up for negotiation, everything is up for change, everything is up for modernization, everything is up for reconsideration, everything is up for time, place, and circumstance, Prabhu. Everything is up for remolding, retooling, redoing, And at the end, you've become so innovative and so effective and so tremendously adaptive that you're 100% standard issue, materialistic American. And the difference between you and them becomes microscopic. And I grew up in a tradition like that. It was, you know, officially belonged to a particular religious culture, but their determination was to be adaptive, and the result was that they became the fastest losing denomination of that religion. By far. And who grew were the Orthodox guys, the guys who were dressing like, the 19th century. Because they stood for something. You could tell either you were or you weren't. And they stood for tradition, and they stood for the books, and they stood for all those things. And these guys didn't stand for anything. Maybe I'm overstating the case. Some of their representatives might disagree with me, but in my experience, they were so keen to adapt and fit in, and it wasn't just so that other people, but it was so that we could become like them. And we did become like them. And then, if you marry one of them, well, you know, there's no difference between marrying one of us, because what was the difference again? And so finally you add water, and you know, it's just add water. And you add water, and you add water, and you add water, and pretty soon your milk is water. Except there's a little milk in it somewhere. So there's one side and there's the other side. And if you don't adapt the package, you don't spread. And if everything becomes adapted, because it's all packaged, or because everything is negotiable, then you lose everything. So therefore, one has to have power of attorney, really, finally, from the acharya, because he's chanting 16 rounds every day, because he's following the regular principles strictly, because he's reading the books, because he's taking a consultation from senior devotees, because he very deeply considers the instructions of his spiritual master and makes them his wife and soul. Finally, all of those things required. And finally, because Krishna says, I will empower you. And therefore, we see that such a person becomes successful in spreading the Krishna consciousness movement. But sometimes one has to be very careful, because sometimes even what seems like success is failure. By selling out this or that principle, you can get a lot of public support. You can get a lot of public support. And then it seems like you're very successful. And you are very successful, materially speaking. But you sold out to take a favorite example that one sannyasi has. Prabhupada was very clear about where he stood in regard to philanthropy. The philanthropists and humanitarians were enemies. The Mayavadis, the impersonalists, the materialists, the philanthropists, the humanitarians, anyone who wasn't for Krishna consciousness, they were all enemies. That is to say, bam, 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 bam. You know, Prabhupada shot them down. He shot down materialistic science, he shot down impersonalism, he shot down sense gratification as the goal of life. He shot down humanitarianism and philanthropy as being extended selfishness. But if you adopt a program which is philanthropic, if you decide that hungry school children in India need to stay in school and therefore they need free hot meals, people will throw money at you, and then you are successful. And you can say that you're saving the world from hunger, and that this is what the Hare Krishna movement stands for. And then people say, well, the Hare Krishna movement is so good. And in this way, you can make tremendous gains, and all you have to sacrifice is the philosophy and the instructions of the Tathagatacharya, who said, simply distributing food is nonsense. It must be accompanied by spiritual education. So sometimes my point is that what seems like success, the cheering of the crowd is the sound of the people celebrating the divides of your principles. The extremists. Extremists are people who, when you make the middle over here, are over there or over there. If you make the middle over here, the extremists are the mainstream. But go ahead. People who are so extreme that they, and their principles, that they, whatever it is that they stand for, that they forget about the devotees. Okay, let's address two things. First of all, is that okay?
As devotees.
So let's first of all do two things. Extremists is nonsense. Extremism is nonsense. Extremism is a propaganda word. Your terrorist is my freedom fighter. Your extremist is my, your fundamentalist or your extremist is my person who's standing for integrity and higher values. So everyone's an extremist. Again, this is where you draw the middle. If this is the middle, then that's an extreme position. If this is the middle, then this is an extreme position. So an extremist is basically someone you disagree with strongly. It has no other meaning. It's a propaganda word. You know, Muslims are all extremists. Or the people who disagree with the United States policy are extremists. So that's the first thing. So that's the first part of it. It's not just to say, the word doesn't have tremendous value, or it has negative value. It confuses things. We have to look at issues and not at labels like extremists, fundamentalists, rightists, extreme rightists, extreme centrists. You know, the person who's in the center is a fanatic. He won't go to the right or to the left. But then your second point, or your main point really, is that we get so caught up in these things that we forget about one another as devotees. And certainly that should not happen. Prabhupada said the purpose of the society is to bring the members closer to Krishna and closer to one another. So that we want. The place across the street is called Self-Realization Fellowship. And I don't know, for Self-Realization, my impression is that they really don't have a whole lot going. And I don't know how the fellowship is, but it's a good word. It's a good word. That our Krishna consciousness movement is meant to develop fellowship, which means a sort of good feeling among the members, a concern that other members have for one another, a interest in helping one another in their Krishna consciousness, even materially. My goodness, take a tally, how many hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars we've raised and spent for feeding bums and poor little school children in tattered clothes and all of that stuff. And then look at the material needs of devotees in the Krishna consciousness movement who, for one reason or another, fall through the cracks. Prabhupada said, charity begins at home. It's called Vaishnava Seva. And every group has that. Every religious group, every cultural group, every national group, every political group has concern for their own members, first of all. So if you're feeling philanthropic, if you're feeling humanitarian, if you're feeling charitable, give to the Vaishnavas, first of all. There are Vaishnavas who, for one reason or another, need some help. Even materially speaking, and help them before you make a show of saving the world so the people will think you're a great guy or a great group of guys. Start out with serving the Vaishnavas, which is approved in all of our scriptures. So, materially speaking, spiritually speaking, which is not to say we only help Vaishnavas. Are you a Vaishnava? Well, no. Get out of my life. But this That concern should be there. Someone has given his life to Krishna. How valuable that person is, and how concerned we should be that that person should not be lost. Prabhupada told that to Mahaprabhu in regard to one of our God brothers. He said, you should see that he is not lost. See to it that he's not lost. Prabhupada said that our men are like bomber pilots. Apparently in World War II, a bomber pilot was really somebody. To become a bomber pilot, you underwent so much training, you got so much skill, and then you had position. You know, a bomber did a lot. It wasn't like an infantryman. A bomber pilot was a guy who flew these planes under difficult conditions with the enemy shooting at him and delivered the bombs. They're not easy to come by, you know, not easily disposable commodities. They were valued. The prophet said, our men are on the planets. To make one devotee, prophet said, we have to shed gallons of blood. So much trouble to bring someone to Krishna consciousness. And then if we drive them away, what is our credit? Because it's easy to get rid of people. Easy to drive people away. That doesn't take a lot of skill. But to keep people. Therefore, Prabhupada, somebody would be like off track, and Prabhupada would say, it's not that we want to throw them out, or what was the expression that we want to correct them? Prabhupada has somebody remember there was an expression about that? But not to break them.
Bend them, don't break them.
Bend them, but don't break them. You know, to correct people, to bring them back to the standard, one way or another way to bring them back to the point, but not to smash them and crash them and drive them away. Because we have concern for their spiritual welfare, for the, some of the right there are family members. So we should try to see that our family members are lost. Shall we stop here? Thank you all very much. I appreciate your words.
Holy Mr. Swami Maharaj, Jai! Ki Jai, Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande.
Hare Krishna. Before you leave, we would like to just make a few announcements for the day. First of all, we would like to welcome all on behalf of the